All right, if you've listened this far, you know the deal. The book that came out of this podcast is called How the Internet Happened, From Netscape to the iPhone by me, available wherever fine books are sold. Also, the podcast I do these days is called The Tech Meme Ride Home. Search any podcast app for Ride Home, and you should find The Tech Meme Ride Home, which is all the day's tech news every weekday in just 15 minutes. If you like this show, you'll love that one.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to the Internet History Podcast. I'm your host, Brian McCullough. Gary Kremen is another early internet entrepreneurial legend. Kremen was one of the first people to recognize the opportunity that the internet presented in terms of classified advertising. Seizing this opportunity, Kremen founded Match.com, which to this day is still the largest player in the online dating space. But Kremen is also famous for the legendary struggle to control the sex.com domain name, which Kremen himself registered, lost control of, regained control of after a lengthy legal battle, attempted to turn into the adult online version of Google, and eventually sold on to other investors. As a special bonus with this episode, if you visit our website, www.internethistorypodcast.com, and go to the post page for this episode, you can see the original business plan for what became Match.com, as well as the first three pages of the original Match.com questionnaire, and even the lawsuit filing relating to the sex.com brouhaha. My thanks to Gary himself, of course, for sharing this with us. All in all, this is one of the most colorful and fascinating interviews that we've been able to feature so far on this show. So, please enjoy it. Gary Kremen, thanks for coming on the Internet History Podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here.
We usually start with schooling, and I see you're an alumni of both Northwestern and Stanford. What were you studying?
Yeah, so at Northwestern, I got degrees in both electrical engineering and computer science. Graduated in 1985, and during the period 1981 to 1985 was probably the first time I was introduced to email and the nascent internet. By the time I was started at Stanford in 1987, I was pretty facile with kind of internet technologies, FTP, email, which of course is different bases. So by then, 1987, 88, 89, I knew that's where my career was going to go.
You knew it was going to be on the internet? You thought that the internet was the future and that's where you were going to have your career?
I did. It was that early. And I always thought there was a commercial aspect of it. So I started, at Northwestern Computer Science, kind of an early node. And there were some earlier nets that were before the internet. I mean, the internet is a network of networks. So there was stuff like CXNet, UUCP, if you recall that. There was some early stuff that rolled up, and sometimes people would put gateways together. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, so that's where I started on some of those subnets that started adding internet connections. So when I graduated Northwestern, I went to a company called the Aerospace Corporation, aerospace.org. But before it was aerospace.org, it was aerospace.arpa. So I remember before .com, .net, and the top level, all the top level country code domains got rolled out. So I was on it earlier than that.
Well, and
so
also,
big claim to fame.
That's an interesting point. Also, if you're envisioning that your career and you can build businesses on the net. At this point, the net is not commercial or not supposed to be commercial. So that really is prescient that you're seeing that there's commercial possibilities here.
Yeah, and when we say net, you know, what is the net? Is it a transport mechanism? What does it mean? Is it the set of services that run on top of it? What I was fascinated by was the early Usenet groups, which were communication groups like that I think a lot of things evolved out of. That a lot of times were the message were sent around through something called UUCP, Unix to Unix Copy Protocol. And people use the TCP/IP as a communications protocol. And I started kind of making social postings and doing small business deals in 1986-1987 timeframe.
So when you do graduate, so what are the first steps that you take towards an entrepreneurial career and moving towards building a business on the web or the internet?
Yeah, it's broadly defined because the web didn't really get there to anyone saw. I mean, I didn't see it the 92, 93 and start putting Matches interface afterwards working on email in 95 because people didn't know what was going to win if it was going to be the web. If you might recall, and I'm skipping around a lot, there was other protocols like Lynx, Archie, Veronica, Gopher. Mm-hmm. No one really knew it was going to be the web.
You know, that's funny that you say that because several other people have said that to me from the time period, that there were so many different protocols and it wasn't clear at the beginning that the web would be the one that would win out. Do you remember the first time you encountered the web?
Yeah, you know, so I was using Lynx, which was a graphic kind of curses, which was the name of the library I think it used in Unix-based look at the web. And then someone, I'm trying to remember who showed me Mosaic. It was, you know, 0.6 or 0.7. I think it was at some room in Palo Alto. And when I saw it, I knew. I knew. And I had kind of Match.com kind of up and running, and I built it to work on Lynx, and I think that's where I wrote that first initial patent where I invented dynamic web pages after I saw that.
All right. We definitely have to cycle back now. So
back on, I was at Aerospace Corporation, which was a kind of a contractor of the federal government, think RAN and Sandia, and I was pretty bored, so I started playing around with Usenet, FTP. I would love to FTP the sites across the world, and I just had an epiphany. You know, all entrepreneurs, it's always linked to something they understand or good ones. I had an epiphany, this is where the commercial world's going to go. And I started buying and selling some stuff on Usenet in that time frame, and by the time I got to Stanford Business School in 1987, I kind of had a sense this is where I wanted to play, at least in the networking side of business.
And so one of your first ideas is to continue this sort of buying and selling, and that would lead logically to classifieds and buying and selling on the net?
It was an earlier company, and I think you could probably find it if we Google it. It was called Full Source Software. I started the world's first open source software company. And that was when I graduated business school and no one would employ me. Came up with the idea of Full Source Software, it's on Crunchbase, pretty funny. And the idea there was I downloaded me and a business partner, a guy named Ben Dubin. We downloaded software from FTP servers. You know, of course, at his work where he was working at Sun, you know, they probably had 156 KB line for the whole company. He was a roommate of mine. And why don't we put it on floppy disks for people who didn't have FTP or internet access?
So you're making libraries of what's existing for offline use.
That's right. And most people didn't have online use. So if you were at even a company like IBM, very few people had internet access. You know, you'd have to have a Unix machine and you have to be running TCP, IP and get out. That was a small percent of people until 98, 99, 2000 that actually had that, if you think about it. Right. So in 92 or 93, I think 92, we came up with this idea of, why don't we take some source code and we'll compile it for a bunch of Unix variants and sell it to people.
And was that successful?
Yeah, we made a couple $100,000 doing that. And that gave us our gave me some initial capital to start the next company, which was called Los Altos Technologies, where we picked one or two of the security programs, and we wrote the world's first security assurance program, the first antivirus software for Unix, the world's first tripwire. So we took some of that initial capital and started a company, raised a little outside money, and we started selling the software where we didn't get source code to give Unix security software, and that was where Match.com came from. And I could tell that story, but I could kind of backtrack a little bit to Full Source Software.
Right. Well, so Full Source leads into Los Altos.
Which an event there caused me to think about Match.com. At the same time, I still was doing some consulting work on the side, and I was working as a consultant at a company called Telebit. And Telebit made some of the first high-speed modems. It used to be 9600 baud, the Bell 212A protocol when you were at 300 baud and 1200 baud. And they started adding protocols like V32 and V32 bis and TAR to go 56 kb. And they had a product called the NetBlazer that would allow you to do IP over modems. And that was when kind of UUNET came into the beginning, which is the idea of let's be a ISP. I think they were the first one, them and NetCom. I remember when they came up.
Or PSI, right?
What?
Or PSI, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, PSI, I think, on the East Coast. But I think Marty Schoenstall, who was an investor in one of my later companies, you know, if it's in the East Coast, we don't count them. In the Valley, we're very mean. Like
right,
that.
Right. Oh, go on. Sorry, I interrupted.
It was pretty early, too. So I was working at Telebit. I could kind of see these things were flying off the hook. I started these two companies. I was kind of early in the internet, we'll call it the networking, the online community. And when I was at this Los Altos Technology, we used to advertise in magazines like Sun World, and we would get, there was no website. You wouldn't put your URL in there, but you would put an email address. And we started getting people inquiring about our product. And then we started getting purchase orders, and people would send something using attachments. And it was based on something called MIME. I don't know if you ever heard of MIME.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. The email protocol.
You're an internet guy, right?
Yeah. I'm 37, so I'm slightly younger than this era, but I do remember things like MIME. Yes.
Yeah. So people would hook up MIME in different ways, and they would kind of start sending attachments, okay? And this is way before Netscape. You know, this is before your Chapter 6. This is way earlier on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one day we started getting a purchase. We'd get purchase orders, okay? And one day we got a purchase order from a woman. An admin. So what was happening is people were starting at very large companies that were running Lotus Notes for internal email. I don't know if you remember Lotus Notes.
Absolutely.
And they would hook their stuff up, and then you could send out to the outside world. And this was way before Netscape and all this kind of stuff. This is like chapter zero in your book. You need to go before Netscape. Your stuff. I'm totally serious. I remember getting this purchase order, the attachment from a woman. And when you get a purchase order at a little company like ours, and we're still struggling, you know, we could eat. I had a lot of credit card debt. We could eat because we got a purchase order. And I turned to my business partner, and I said, we have a purchase order from blah, blah, blah. And he goes, that's great. We can eat or whatever. And I go, yeah, but it's from this woman. And he's like, good, probably an admin over there. And I go, yeah, but Ben, do you think she's cute?
Mm.
So it's always epiphany. So at the same time, I was solving another trying to solve another, a couple other problems that were going on at the same time. One is I wanted to find the woman I wanted to marry. And how I was doing it is there used to be these things called 900 numbers. And I would, you know, you'd advertise in a newspaper. And you would call, people to listen to your ad or communicate with you would have to call a 900 number.
Or a party line, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, but you got billed. And I was getting big bills trying to meet someone and putting ads. And I noticed these people with newspapers, especially the alternative newspapers, there wasn't a lot of content in there, but it was all these personal ads. I would be giving them a lot of money. And I noticed that people on newspapers had a shitload of money and I had not as much.
At the time, the newspapers were rolling in it, right?
Oh, my God, yeah, because they you have a local monopoly. So I had this kind of epiphany. I wonder if I could sell access to that woman who sent me the email, this purported, alleged, cute woman.
So the idea is to take classifieds and do it on a networked basis, but specifically you're saying personal.
Started with dating.
Right.
But I quickly registered all the domain names because I realized it was more than dating. It was jobs, it was autos, it was housing. So I grabbed them all.
Mm-hmm.
Legal, well, auctions, sex. That was an afterthought. But the idea was, why can't I create an email-based service to do all this stuff? So you go send girl 74, you know, little language I did, and why not send a classified, you know, job 31? So I came up with this idea of anonymous remailing. I mean, I think there might have been a tiny bit before me. I shouldn't claim that one, but adding it into a database and sending information back on classified advertising.
So how would people discover this?
So they would somehow find out about it, and, you know, I will get into the marketing strategy later on. But the idea is if you were an attractive woman and I realized, well, let's convince them to go to Kinko's to get their picture scanned in, and we would, you know, you would go, they would have a form they filled out, and there's a form online, you can find our form, and they would fill out a questionnaire, and we would process it, we would analyze it and put it in the database, and then if someone wanted to see a copy of it, we would send it under their profile, and then we would anonymously, you know, send to, you know, anon. That was how all the emails at Match were. It was like anon.cuteguy@match.com, and you would email back and forth, and we would strip out any footers you had, and we would rewrite the headers so it was all anonymous.
So you have Match.com early on, but it's not necessarily for a web play. It's just to have this.
No, there was no web.
Right.
It was not really a web. But then when I kind of saw Mosaic again, I said, you know what? I'm going to put a links interface on this. I'm going to put a Mosaic, a web-based interface. I had a whole, you know, I could send you the first, I think I sent you the first Match.com business plan or one of the early ones.
Right, right, right.
And if you look, and there's a diagram in there that kind of shows all that. Let me see if I can pull it up right now to show it to you. But there's a great diagram in there someplace that kind of runs through that stuff.
Well, I'll post a lot of that stuff when this goes live on the website for the
show.
Yeah, so
I'm looking at this. I have this document dated June 9th, 1994, and it has this technical diagram in there. It's kind of funny to look at it, and you'll see what I was talking about here. There was a layer on here that talked about, you know, Mosaic, email readers, other pipelines in the media, SMTP, HTTP, and the logo of the company, maybe not even in this early one, was the Mosaic logo flipped.
Right, right, right. So, okay.
Yeah, so I talked about this multi-channel thing in here.
Right, so that's what I want to get into. So again, at this point, it's not necessarily clear to you or anyone else that the web is going to be the dominant mode of the internet. And so all you know is that you want to take classifieds and specifically personals, and you want to take them into a network setting. And so it could be email that wins. It could be
erotica or
Archer.
Other things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So now, okay, so this is what's the time period? We're talking middle of 94?
Yeah, well, I saw this vision in 93, and I kind of dallied on it a little bit. But basically, the business plan, I left kind of, I knew I was going to leave this other company, Los Altos Technologies, in mid to late 93. I mean, I moved this, and I realized I needed to do this company in San Francisco for some reason, in South Park, which was the epicenter. So I knew I got up to San Francisco January 1st, 1994, with kind of some of the thoughts on Match.com before that, and some of the plans. But I kind of started maxing out the credit cards in early 94, maybe it was late 93 before the move.
Do you have any recollection of what you would consider the launch date for this business or this product, essentially?
It was in June or July or of 94.
And it's mostly targeting email, right?
It was email-based, and I had the epiphany, let's just focus on women.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so right, that would be a logical next question. So, this is something that's very common nowadays in terms of you're creating a networked product, so if people go to it, there has to already be somebody there.
It's a problem. How do you throw a party? So I said, okay, I know, Matt, you only needed to make the party user, you only needed one woman for every 100 guys. So all I did is focus on marketing the women. So many of my first hires were women only.
And so how do you get women onto the system?
I figure out who's the only influential women online. And there weren't many of them. Maybe there was only 20 or 30. But I would go see them and buy them in and said, put a profile or can tell other women you know. Because I knew that I would have a real fast network effect. And that's basically what happened.
And so, okay, that's another thing that's very interesting. If you think about it, we're certainly used to having this concept of having a profile, an online profile that represents you online. But that's a concept that I'm not sure had been explored before.
I think we invented that.
Right. And so, what are you thinking of? What obviously a picture would be important. What else, what are you thinking in terms of a profile and that sort of
thing? Well, I came up with this idea for two-way matching that if I liked you, you had to like me. And then the idea of metric scores, on like kind of recommendation engine, think of it as, so I actually wrote a questionnaire and I wonder if I can find it while we're talking. 130 questions to ask people on it. I'm wondering if I have it. Let me see if I have it. Oh, I'll send this questionnaire to you. I think I have it. Oh, my God, this is great. Hold on a second. I'm not even sure Word can read this thing anymore. In fact, I think it just crashed trying to read it.
Well, you can always send it afterwards.
Yeah. But it was funny. It was a questionnaire looking at this issue of how many questions did you want to ask? And I started with like 150 questions. And one of the things I found out is no woman wanted to fill out 150 questions. No guy did either. So I narrowed it down to key information, kind of like what you'd see on Facebook. Facebook, what's the minimum viable set to get going?
Mm-hmm. And what success do you have? Like, I'm not asking you for hard numbers, like how many profiles did you launch with or anything like that, but like, do you remember?
Oh, I just found it. This thing is great. Here's from August of 94. Here was our initial questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is great. Oh, it's really good. You're going to love this.
Excellent.
This is a historical document, I guess, the questionnaire. Or I'll call it a draft of the questionnaire.
Well, and it looks like the show notes for this episode are going to be enormous. But I will definitely screen cap and post everything that I can.
I can send it to you.
So while I'm scanning that, at what point do you realize that the web is going to be the thing that takes over, and so you have to shift your resources?
Sometime in late 94, I saw it. You know, I was pretty far going on the email product. So on the side, I kind of had a Skunkworks to kind of add a, you'll see it in the Match.com business plan I sent you, and that was dated 94, and I clearly was thinking we need to do that in 94.
Right. So you're covering all your bases, and then by the end of 94, you would say it's clear?
He looked at business plans dated June 9th, 1994 on page, well, if you search for the word web, we plan to have a hypertext transport card called Links to all known and public pages. I talked about Yahoo right there.
Right.
So if you were early, the business plan is totally worth looking at. Love and sex on the information superhighway. It's pretty funny.
Let me ask you about Yahoo and things like that. So now, what is the early drivers of your marketing and your traffic aside from just seeding the network effect? Is it things like, because I've spoken to a bunch of other, like even Amazon has said that like getting on that Yahoo page early on was key for like just a fire hose of traffic and things like that.
That was good. But I wouldn't give, since we were up and running an email before, an email was bigger at the time, that was the key. So by the time the web started to take over, let's say a transition, we were well established and we were ready to rock.
So the email product was
unique.
Almost...
We were unique. We had an installed base already.
And so what I'm saying is that the email product is almost what we would call today viral, like just being out there.
Yeah, it was totally viral. When you heard there was women, oh yeah. If you were a guy, of course.
And I haven't mentioned funding or anything like that. Like you said that you had the money from the previous company to launch this, but so at some point, are you approached by VCs? I know that you're talking to Kleiner Perkins at some point, right?
Oh yeah. So I kind of told you that funny Kleiner story of how I missed out making a couple $100 million, right?
Mm-hmm, right. Well, tell the listeners.
So I raised I used my credit cards and I had a little bit of savings, which I blew through, but I realized this was going to be big. I knew about venture capital and stuff like that. But you know, they didn't invest in this kind of thing. So I started going out and talking to people, and I started talking to firms, and I started talking to Kleiner Perkins. And I'll never forget Vinod Khosla and John Doerr. They said, this is the best thing we've ever heard. And it's going to be a big thing. But Gary, you've never been a CEO before of any company of any size. I think, and they said, well, we want you to consider having a CEO to run this, and you'll be a co-founder. And we want you to merge with this other team of guys. And, you know, you would be half of it. They would be the other half. They'll divide it among those six. And
that was Architext.
Yes, who changed their name to Excite.
Right.
You know, and I would have been vested, and it would have been the best. You know, I'd be nearly a billionaire and not.
So why didn't you take the deal?
Because they taught you out of business school to be the CEO. And that was not a good idea.
And you had confidence that you could be a CEO.
What did I know? That's what they teach you. I didn't realize being the CEO was not a good job. And I didn't realize they were right, and I didn't know as much. So I should have taken that offer, but then I took an offer with someone who let me be the CEO, and that turned to be the disaster. Not that I was such a bad CEO, but I didn't understand how to manage up at the time.
Well, right. So who did you end up taking the money from?
From some Canaan Venture Partners, SoftBank, Weiss, Peck, and Greer. And it turned out to have totally got the market wrong and been very embarrassed by dating, and especially the way it evolved. And they tried to get rid of it like a hotcake. When I said we need to do gay and lesbian dating and short-term dating, they like basically almost fired me on the spot.
Right. Let's get into that because so
also they missed its media. Mm-hmm. So, and I maybe I can understand in retrospect, you know, people didn't know what, there were no media. Venture guys don't fund media companies. At least they didn't back then.
Well, and especially not this kind of new media that people are still trying to figure out at the time.
Oh, God, no. No, they understood technology.
So when you do take the money, as I understand the controversy, you say to them, I want to, this is a whole new concept and I want to take it in a new direction. I want to do, this is match.
Well, it wasn't a new direction. I started doing it and okay. They found out and they're like, you're stopping it. I'm like, no, I'm not. This is the market.
So your vision is that it's sort of like this cornucopia of niches. You can do gay and lesbian. You could do what we see now, Christian dating. You could do whatever.
And at the same time, I want to do the classified. So we actually started working on the software. You know, what Craigslist did, jobs.com, autos, housing, property. I'll never forget the day when we decided we're going to have disparate source bases for the whole thing. I think if it was just Christian dating, but when it was gay and lesbian, you know, they had these limited partners, they said, who considered the whole thing unsightly and wrong. I forget which of those guys said that, you know, against God. And I'm like, this is where the money are, guys. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm the entrepreneur.
Well, and also a part of the vision was for, like you said, short-term dating, which is sort of, you know, like you said, the Craigslist personals or the Ashley Madison personals, that sort of thing.
Well, I don't know about Ashley Madison, but not everyone's dating to get married.
Right. So actually, you know, you weren't with Match.com essentially for very long because by 1997, over your objections I read, Match was sold.
4 years, and a lot of fast things were happening then. So, yeah, over my objections, they sold it, and I knew what they wanted to do was not going to work out.
Well, and they sold it for something like $8 million, and a year and a half later, it gets flipped to Ticketmaster.
Yeah, like 9 months later for nearly $50 million, I think $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's funny, I kind of had the last laugh on the whole thing.
How so?
And then it went on and did what I told them would never work, which is produce software to get newspapers online, because I knew how slow they were. Because I went to go see all the newspapers. I talked to them all, and I could see what a bunch of slow people they were.
Okay, that's an excellent segue for me, because I wanted to ask you about this idea that people in the media have that what killed the newspaper industry was the loss of the classifieds monopoly. And so you're literally at the ground floor of this.
I was the ground floor. I went to go talk to them all. Mercury News, Tribune, New York Times. And I'm not sure too many got it. They sure didn't get... They thought they were needed. I think that was the problem. They totally could have pivoted online. And I mean, Tribune bought some of AOL and made a good amount of money there. But they were just so into their arrogance.
Well, wouldn't the key have been they would have to aggregate all together? Because what would be the whole point of doing it online is that you don't have these silos, you don't have these local things. It's you can go to one place and get everything that you need, right?
Yeah. I mean, you might be able to do what kind of Dan Pulcrano at the Metro tried to do semi-successfully, own sanfrancisco.com and do all the San Francisco stuff. You could do that. But my vision was a aggregated database like Match that you would do selection on.
And in terms of the reputation that online classifieds had early on and even till recently, that online classifieds were considered tacky. I mean, maybe that's a holdover from the offline classifieds, but I don't think in this day and age, of Tinder and things like this, that anyone would consider that tacky. But it seems like online classifieds had to deal with that for a long, long time.
It depends. I mean, no one thought the New York Times online classified sucked. It's all about how you do it. And I showed with Match you can make a super quality product. I mean, you understand the parent company of Match was Electric Classifieds, doing classifieds, Vivid and Vibrant, right? If you look at the business plan, ECI, Electric Classifieds, Inc.
And did you have any other verticals that launched successfully?
We were going to, and it was kind of, I think they made the board made the decision that let's go work with the newspapers and launch things, and I knew that was a bad idea.
Yeah, you didn't want to be a partner with them because it was just...
They were too slow. Mm-hmm. I saw it by talking to them. Their unions and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that the result was going to be bad.
Before we get into the domain names and things like that, you're credited with patents and a lot of early stuff. So can we get into that? Like the patent, for example, let's start with like the dynamic web pages.
Yeah, so that was kind of one of my ideas was to I think, you know, if you read that patent broadly, we're the first ever to do affiliate programs. We were the first who came up with the idea, depending on your browser, and if it's a mobile browser, I mean, mobile didn't exist at the time, but produce a different page. Depending on who you were, produce a different page. And people kind of had some of that stuff because cookies existed, but they didn't come up with the idea of pulling it all out of a database. So, and taking into account the environment. So, you know, how a mobile page looks different, that was our idea. How a fast page should render different than a slow page, that was my idea. If you were a certain person, it should render different. That was my idea. If you came originally from AOL in your header, make the page look different. Put a different banner up there.
And did you have any patents for the classifieds end of it?
We filed some stuff, but another thing is the company didn't view the patents as a big deal, and that is where I made a bunch of money, because after the company inevitably failed, it did, and which it did, I went and bought the debt and foreclosed on the patents and sold the patents.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, and we're gonna cycle back again, because when you started Match and all these other ideas, as you said, you had gone out and registered a whole bunch of domains. You know, it's sort of that thing that everybody's uncle has said, oh, if I had gone out and registered jobs.com or housing.com, but you actually did that.
I did. Someone had to be the idiot, and I did it.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, like, what was the process? If you're doing this in 1994, it is networks. Who's the registrar at this point, and what is that cost?
Network Solutions. Okay. And they were giving them away free.
They were giving them away free. It wasn't hundreds of dollars.
No, it wasn't anything. It was free.
Huh.
I was that early.
And so, what size portfolio did you put together?
It was only like 20, but it was the best.
Right. And one of those was sex.com, which you said was sort of an afterthought.
Yeah, so it was a funny thing because I registered all. It was just kind of a ha-ha, me and a guy named Kevin Kunzelman. And we laughed about it. And when I incorporated the company or raised the venture guy said, you got to give us all the domain names. And I'm like, sure. And then when they saw sex.com, oh, you just keep that. That was a big mistake.
They didn't want it.
No, because it was part of their embarrassment with the whole thing.
But you, like, things like jobs.com and housing.com went on in the portfolio.
Yeah, they took those because we were going to develop the businesses, the online classifieds, the electric classifieds, mm-hmm. Vivid, Vibrant classifieds. So what happened is I left Match and I did another startup called NetAngels. And what, there we invented basically the idea of you download software and it would look at all your URLs and then it would suggest URLs on a page to you using collaborative filtering. So pretty good idea, some bad execution. But we actually merged it with a company called Firefly and sold it to Microsoft, and they probably have all those patents for collaborative filtering. After Firefly, NetAngels, I kind of got an office to hang out, and I made some early investments, even on my credit card. That turned out pretty good. But I was in this office, and one day I said, oh, so a long way, someone told me, oh, that sex.com isn't under your name anymore. And I'm like, whatever. And I kind of forgot about it because I'll be honest, I didn't realize what a big deal this would be. And then when I got in this office, there was a lawyer who like passed the bar the week before. And I said, hey, can you go find out whatever happened to that sex.com domain name? And that's where the story kind of starts.
And so you know that it stayed with you because they didn't want it when they took over the company.
Yeah, and I would check the registration on who is, and then I noticed it was gone, or maybe someone told me it was gone. But look, I had so many things going on. You know, we were kind of in the golden age of the first bubble. A lot was going on. Other companies I was thinking of, stuff like that.
So what would be the time period when all of a sudden you're reconsidering, maybe I need to check into sex.com and there might be something going on here?
You know, I forget exactly what it is, but I think I could probably pull that up for you. It was 97 or 98.
And so what turns out is that someone had fraudulently transferred the domain to his name and was running sex.com at this point.
That's right. So it was kind of a pretty interesting story. This 5-time convicted felon, Stephen Michael Cohn, who was obsessed with sex, an early bulletin board user of all things, he got a hold of it, and that's part of the story itself. And I didn't even when I was found this information, I didn't do anything about it for 6 months, but eventually I told this newly minted lawyer, this woman named Sherry Falco, well, why don't we go do something about it? And I think she contacted some, I said, go call some people in this adult industry and find out what you find out. And I think eventually I was told, I know what happened. She got a call and she called around and then she got a call from the Patent and Trademark Office basically saying that, well, this Mr. Cohn has a trademark for sex.com, and, trademarks trump it. And I knew that, you know, the famous McDonald cases, and that's one of the reasons I registered only generic things, generic domain names. I kind of knew that if I started registering, you know, McDonald's.com, I'd get a spanking. I kind of knew about trademark law. And because of that phone call, we let it go for a little while, and then I woke up one day and said, you know, the government never proactively calls anyone. There's something going on here. And then I think we readdressed it and found out he was a felon convicted of bankruptcy fraud, obstruction of justice, making false statements. And eventually we filed litigation against him.
Well, because what happens is that he essentially defrauds Network Solutions in order to take control of the domain.
No, we didn't. So that's not what happened. The forgery came later.
Okay.
It's a cover-up by Network Solutions lawyers.
So it had just lapsed or something?
No. He called up the CSR, and because they didn't have any security procedures, they never sent me an email, they never did anything, and they turned it over to him. So if you read what Judge Kaczynski said in the Ninth Circuit, it's like turning over the world's most valuable domain name to a guy in a letter that said he didn't have an internet connection. It was so we found this out later on when one of my lawyers found the letter was later, what came after the transfer. So I complained. I can't remember all the details. I have to go look in my notes, but they basically decided to do a cover up. So they were the guilty company, no doubt.
So
instead of turning it back to me after I complained, they said, we're standing with the felon.
They're covering their own ass.
And that cost them a lot of money, that cover-up.
Well, okay, so because what has Stephen Cohen done with sex.com at this point?
So then he turned it into a banner farm because those were acceptable back then, and he was making $1 million a month that he was using to fight my litigation, and I didn't have that much money.
Hmm. So let's talk about the case, because it does turn out to be a landmark case, the first of its kind, basically, because I don't think, has there been a ruling in this area of the law before?
No. So, in fact, what happened is when I went to court, the judge threw out a lot of the case. They threw out the whole case against Network Solutions, which became VeriSign, and said, well, you know, this isn't property, so it doesn't matter if they turned it over, because they weren't turning over anything real.
I'm sorry. So they're saying that the domain itself was not property.
Yeah, so I lost. My case, Crennan v. Cohn, is a seminal Ninth Circuit case that before anything in electronic registry was not property.
Hmm. And so how does that turn around for you?
Well, it was horrible. It was devastating against, I'll call them, the bad company. And they got out of the case. So I had some other charges against the bad guy, but that weren't thrown out. But I appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and I hired a way better lawyer, a guy named Jim Wagstaff. And he said, this is wrong. All things of value are property. And the judge just didn't want to fight what the judge called fighting between two pornographers over a dime bag of pornography, because I wasn't able to get my case. I was some innocent guy, because the other guy, the bad guy, pretended he was a lawyer. He said Manuel Noriega made him a lawyer.
So in the end, you are successful in the Crennan versus Cohen and Network Solutions.
So I won against the bad guy at the lower court. I got a $65 million judgment against him. By then he fled to Mexico, which is his own story. We could circle back to that. Mm-hmm. And I appealed to the Ninth Circuit. And in a really good ruling, I can send you the ruling. It was the first case that addressed, is anything on the internet property?
Well, it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, right?
It did. It went to both the Supreme Court, and it also went to the California Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And the California Supreme Court did not want to hear it. And eventually they reversed it, and then I went against, we'll call it, you know, this dude. And we settled out the case. It's a great decision to read if you're curious.
And you end up with a decent $60 million or so verdict, essentially against Network Solutions, right?
Well, actually, it's funny. They were on the hook for three times that, theoretically. Now, they had a lot of defenses. So, you know, now it goes back for the trial court to hear, okay, just because you're, quote, liable, you might have defenses. Did Mr. Crennan wait too long? You know, they're called latches. So we decided to do a confidential settlement and settle that out.
All right, and then
it didn't stop.
Right, and but then at this point, it occurs to you, well, if this guy's been making $1 million a month with sex.com, then there's a real business here, and now that I own it, I would like to try my hand at making this a business, right?
Well, even before that, you know, I went after him. I took his mansion down in Rancho Santa Fe, which I lived in for 5 years, and I spent a lot of time collecting. But then eventually I get this name turned back over to me, and I'm just like, what am I going to do to pay off my $4 or $5 million legal bills? So the next thing I do is I say, okay, well, I don't want to be in the pornography business. Is there a business I could be in with this domain name? So I say, you know what's missing? I had all this traffic. I'm going to go do Google of adult.
Right, and this is what year about?
Like 2002.
Right, so that makes sense. Google is obviously a huge success at this point.
And Google wasn't the winner back then. Exactly. There was a lot of other search engines like 7Search and Ask Jeeves and Mama and other things.
Dogpile, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, Dogpile. And I noticed they didn't have adult results, and they didn't have many. So I came up with the business idea. It was a good idea. Why don't I use all this traffic to go call on adult advertisers, and I'll be a pay-per-click search engine. Not only will I be there, I will give my pain results to other search engines in an XML feed in real time. So I came up with this business. You would go to Dogpile and type an adult term, and they would query us, and I would give all the listings, and if someone clicked, I would do a revenue share. And that turned out to be a great business. So after I sold the sex.com domain name, I still had that business because I had all these advertisers. And not only that, Dogpile wouldn't just query an adult term. They would give me all their queries. And with those, I would start selling advertising for those terms. And I would go to other search engines and say, Dogpile, someone typed water district or water rates. I would go to 7Search and go get paid results and feed them back to them.
And
that was a good business.
Right, which you do sell in 2006. So, because one article I read, I'm trying to be delicate about this, but it seems to me that maybe your brush with the adult industry was not healthy. Let's say.
Oh yeah, well that's a true comment. You know, it's one of these things that sometimes you get close to the devil, you can get drawn in the thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you learn anything having come from the .com environment? You know, like you've seen...
Oh, yeah. Adult industry is full of idiots for the most part.
Right, and you've seen that I've tried to do a chapter on the history of the adult industry online. Like, do you have any insight on that? Like, what's happened with the adult industry with its attempts to move online and things?
That's been pretty tough. Well, online has been okay. Let me see here. Which chapter was the adult?
Chapter 6.
Right. By the way, in some of your chapters, I was involved in AltaVista.com.
Right, because they sold or they did a deal to do search ads for adult.
I did that deal. A guy named Jack Marshall. So I recognize a lot of these early people in your thing. So let's see what your adult section is. I don't know why I didn't see that.
Well, it was only one episode because I haven't gotten any interviews for it yet. So
I could get you a lot of them. Oh, the history of internet porn. Let's see.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question actually really is, coming from tech and.
Yeah.
And
I came from tech. That's the difference.
And entering this world, like, was it sort of like, you know, they don't know what they're doing, and maybe you don't know what you're doing in adult?
Yeah, I thought I could bring things to them.
And maybe were they interested in learning from you?
A little bit. You know, I definitely taught some stuff about business and stuff like that, that it isn't all partying. Of course, I got, you know, I learned some of my own stuff about partying from these people. But, yeah, the answer is yes.
And, sorry, go ahead.
And one of the things I think I hope teach people, some of the people, you need to have an exit route for your business. You make much more money if you have something you can sell as opposed to you just take the cash. And hardly any people in adult thought about, is there a business we could create that someone would buy at a multiple of cash flow?
Well, there's like no long-term thinking in terms of...
That's what I'm saying. I tried to teach some strategy to these bunch of people.
Because in that Chapter 6 episode, one of the things that I said was, it's interesting to me, there's never been a Playboy of the online era. There's never been a Google of adult. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's Pornhub. There's people who, you know, Andrew Conru of Adult Friend Finder, who made a couple hundred million dollars.
Right.
You know? And there's, you know where the successful guys did, and it was a place I wasn't willing to go? A lot of them went offshore and were early spammers and downloaders and virus people and extortionists. I'm sure a lot of people I know right now are the guys who encrypt your computer and say, send me 5 bitcoins.
Right. Well, which was my I'm just curious about it that, you know, at least Playboy was a company that went public and was, you know, traded on the stock exchange and things like that. And we're 20 years into the online era, and no one's been able to sort of leave the seedy side of adult, at least online.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So you do sell sex.com in January of 06, right?
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, you know, having gone through all this, having gone through the birth of online and tangling with the adult world, you subsequently have been investing a lot in things like green tech and things like that, correct?
Well, I started a company. I'm always on the entrepreneur side. I can't work for anyone else. So I noticed that, like, I've been interested in sustainability for a long time, that people, contractors, people who put solar on the house, never used the internet. And I came up with the idea to use an internet-based platform to help solar contractors and do point-of-sale financing. And I started a company to do that, and now the company's backed by Kleiner Perkins and Google and Southern California Edison and Florida Power and Light and Duke and a bunch of other firms.
Is that Clean Power Finance?
Yeah.
Yes. And so is there something that you see like that's a new revolution, maybe not waiting to happen, but in the process of happening?
Yeah, I do. I do. I want to do some give back, you know, to society.
Also, I read that you recently won a seat on the Santa Clara Water Board. Is that a part of the giving back as well?
Yeah. So another thing I did is I incubated, was chairman of a firm that did water conservation. You know, how do we sustain our resources? So that company is backed by a couple venture firms. And I've been thinking about water conservation. And one of the things I noticed when you're in sustainability, politics are pretty important. At the end of the day, there's a lot of political nature to the beast. So I decided to run for office, and I won, which is horrid.
Do you feel like it's a fluke?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wish I didn't sometimes.
Well, have you been attending the meetings and things like that, I assume?
I'm the chairman. This is a 1,000-person organization.
Mm-hmm.
$500 million budget. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I'll tell you, oh my God. Well, someone will probably find this quote, but I'll say it anyhow because I'm like that. In a way, it's kind of like the adult industry. They don't have common business practices there. They're increasing the water rates a huge amount at the same time to giving the CEO a huge rate.
So is it government that is like the adult industry? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Exactly. The government is like the adult industry from a business practices point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also subsequently, we could say that you've settled down and you've raised a family. And so when you're looking back on more than 20 years of your entrepreneurial career, it's been a twisty roller coaster ride. When you started looking at networks and networking and things like that, like
and by the way, the ride's not over. I will do something else.
No, that's what I'm saying. But
I did another one along the way that didn't work, but I raised some venture money.
Which was
social. It's called Sociogrammics.
Mm-hmm.
Use social media data to bring credit to the underbanked people who don't have credit files to kind of prove identity.
Well, there's a lot of people that I speak to that are jumping on board the, Bitcoin and things like that as well. It sounds like that maybe...
Oh, and then I'm running a cryptocurrency incubator called crosscoinventures.com.
Exactly. So my question was, I will posit that it's not over. The ride is not over. But right now, looking back on roughly 20 years, would you have seen yourself where you are right now? And part two, would you have seen internet technology and technology in general where it is right now? Could you have imagined it?
Yeah, I don't think all of it. I think that's a legitimate question. I mean, I saw the promise in the past, the current. I see the future promise and risks of Internet of Things. I mean, it's kind of funny. I kind of knew the Internet wasn't going to – it was a technology. It wasn't going to be a – you can't say it's a force for good or a force for evil. It's in the middle. And I think it's going to continue to be that. We'll see a lot of positive things, and we'll see a lot of negative things.
One more question, because it occurs to me that we're at a point where with especially mobile, but we've seen it in social as well, that classifieds are coming back as a thing to do as a moneymaker. Being the person that brought classifieds into the digital realm, what do you think of classifieds and that sort of network selling, the state that it's in today?
Well, if you're in a newspaper, you're not too happy. All your revenue's been sucked out. But, you know, online, it was kind of the vision I thought. It would be vibrant. It would be images. It would be sound. It would be video. It would be kind of taking the unboring stuff and making it electric, hence electric classifieds.
Well, Gary Kremen, thank you so much for coming on the show and walking us through two really, and more than two, multiple fascinating stories of 20 years of an online entrepreneur.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be part of, you know, all my friends now talk about the podcast, so I'm excited. Keep me informed of what's going on with it.
Will do. If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. There's plenty more great internet history where that came from. And if you're a longtime listener, then you know what to do to help us out. Rate and review us on iTunes. Because iTunes gives credit to reviews and ratings, and the more great reviews we get, the more people will discover us. As always, there's more info on our website, www.internethistorypodcast.com. The show's Twitter handle is @NetHistoryPod, and my personal Twitter is @BrianMCC. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.